Good day. Good to see you again on this another Word on Wednesday. Again, we are going through the book Transition, Leading Your Church Through Change by Dan Sutherland. We are now at Implementing the Vision, Step 5. We talked prior to this, you know, if you walk through the steps of preparation, you define the vision and plan it and the vision and share the vision, you're ready to roll. I think that's what the book uses, that phrase, ready to roll. You're ready to get in the game. You've done all the preparation that you needed. You've defined what the vision is, and you have your target and your purpose and all of that, and now you're ready to jump into the game. That's where we are, and I wanna walk through this real briefly. If you could, on your outline, it says ready to roll. There are many reasons many churches who try to make major transition fail, and here it is. They don't take time to work through the vision process. And so I think that's key for us as we move forward, as we talk about vision. But you got to take the time. You got to, take time to work through the vision process. And so that's what we're doing here. I think it's correct. The book says that most churches spend far too little time in preparation and move far too quickly into making changes. We take very little time in preparing to do it. We know their changes have to happen. And so we want to move quickly to making those changes. But you got to pause for a moment and take some time to walk through it. And, that's one of the things that I've been sharing with people in my own transition with Cornerstone as well as St. Paul, is that, it's a process. And you gotta take time to do it. There are so many different variables that could come up. So we have to be patient. We didn't get here overnight, and we're not going to get where God wants us to be overnight. So we got some work to do, and we gotta be prepared to be patient. I like what the book says, that we rush in where even angels fear to tread. We rush to make changes, and that could kill a transition real quickly. So if you're in a hurry, I think the book says it, I think I agree with it, that if you are in a hurry, please do not make changes. Lead a church through transition. If you just got to have it right now and got to get it done, that's a mistake and a disaster waiting to happen. So here are the principles to apply in implementing vision. First of all, when you're implementing vision, on your outline it says implement vision or your changes one at a time. In other words, you don't try to tackle a whole lot of changes at once. You take time to implement those changes one at a time. We do that in our own life. We should do that in our own life. He talks about those that go through Celebrate Recovery and how when you notice all these things that got to change in your life, and you try to make all those changes at once, it's a challenge. That is also in the life of the church as well. We got to learn to make changes one at a time. Too many changes on your outlines says at one time will leave everyone frustrated, which is a problem. If you got a whole lot of folk that's frustrated because you're trying to make changes, and you're trying to make too many changes in a short period of time, it's going to leave folk frustrated. And I've seen it happen in the life of the church, and I'm sure you have as well. So you got to do it one change at a time is best. Sometimes you can, divert from that. But for the most part, people get frustrated when you're trying to do all these different things. It's not easy to do. You got to slow down. You got to slow the pace. Nehemiah's first work crew appeared in chapter 3. They began with just the gates. He talked about it. In chapter 3, you'll see it. He started at the sheep gate and the fish gate. In verse number 3, it talks about how they, verse 3, where they were at another gate. But you'll see that he started at the gates. One at a time, those gates are important because you can't focus on more than one change at a time. There's an old saying that says, by the yard it's hard, but inch by inch it's a cinch. If you try to tackle the whole yard, it's going to be hard. If you try to tackle the whole changes at once that you have to make, it's going to be frustrating. It's going to be a challenge. It's going to be difficult. By the yard it's hard, inch by inch it can be a cinch. And that's the goal. We want to make it as easy as possible, not discounting the fact that any change that you make is never going to be easy, but you can avert a lot of frustration if you make the decision to go slow. One change at a time. That's the first principle to apply when you're implementing vision. Second one is this: implement your changes in a strategic order. That's put that in that blank, strategic order. Dan Sutherland gives illustration of how when they were younger they used to have watermelon seed fights, and he was suggesting that a watermelon seed, when you squeeze it, you never could direct the watermelon seed to go where you wanted it to go. You aim it at one person and it probably hit somebody that was on your team. He uses that example because he talks about watermelon seed style of leadership. And that is when leadership really holds a straight course for any extended period of time. You going in one direction and then you dart off into another direction. The suggestion is this: we have to be strategic. You have to see where the changes need to be made, and we have to be strategic with it. You don't want watermelon seed leadership where you're just darting off into every different direction. You got to attack some of the changes strategically, and it has to be a certain order, a certain place. When you look, study chapter 3 and chapter 4, you'll notice the order of changes that are the order of strategy that Nehemiah used. It was first the gates, then they worked on the wall, and then they put the finishing touches third. It was strategic. The gates first, then the wall, and then they put the finishing touches on it. I think it's important that you be strategic in order of importance of what changes need to be made, if any. So what's the order for your church or our church? I love the fact that he starts off in the book by saying no one but God, and that's on your outline. Put that in that blank, God. No one but God can give you the strategic order of your transition. Nobody, God knows more than we'll ever know. Our thoughts are not his thoughts, and our ways are not his ways. He knows better than we could ever know. And we have our own idea, but God knows. And so And that's why I love the verse out of James chapter 1, verse 5 that says, if any of you lack wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously without finding fault, and it will be given to him. In other words, ask God. If you don't understand, if you want wisdom on being strategic on any transition that needs to be made, you first have to start out by asking God. Here it is. If you found God's vision, then we got to trust that God's going to show us the right order to implement change. We can alleviate a lot of challenges if we decide a strategic order. Notice Nehemiah. Gates, wall, he started at gates. Gates, fish gate, sheep gate, dung gate, all of that. Then the wall, and then the finishing touches. Strategic. I love that. Strategic. And then you ask God for what the order might be, because who knows best other than God? Father knows best. You all remember that television show. That's just true. Father knows best. So we ask God. That's the order. What's the order? No one but God can give you a strategic order for your transition. Number two on that, though, is the order of change is different for every church. What works for St. Paul probably won't work at Cornerstone. One of the challenges that I came up with when I first started pastoring at Rose Olivet, I took a lot of stuff that I got from St. Paul when I left, and I tried to just piecemeal it into Cornerstone. Did not work, because what fit for St. Paul was not a good fit for Rose Olivet, now Cornerstone. So the order is different for every church. Note that. The right plan for change will be unique for every church. I like the fact that Sutherland gives a suggestion that he says that change in purpose should be made first. In other words, you gotta know what your purpose is. Why are you where you are, and what is the main thrust or purpose of your church in that area, in that local area, in that city? And then he says probably target, then strategies and change should be made last. Because if you know your target, now let's say for instance you're going to make some changes in your worship style, but who are you going after? Who are you going to use for that? That's going to be key. List the changes that need to be made, that you need to make, then put them in strategic order. Number three, you got to put key leaders to work in visible places. Here's what we know. Nehemiah put his best and most well-known leaders in visible places. And so when you are implementing vision, the third thing is you got to put key leaders in visible places. Here's what Nehemiah understood. He understood the principle of leader visibility. When you put key leaders in visible places of leadership, people see and join in. If they see staff doing it, they'll say, well, they're paid to do that. That's why they do that. But if they see other leaders in visible places, they'll join in. And you say, why did he put them at the gates? Think about it. Nehemiah put key leaders in, and one verse says he put the high priest at a gate. That's verse 1. But why the gates? Why the gates? Because he used the gates first, because people coming in and out of the city, they would see those key leaders working. And they said, man, if they're working, they're doing it, let me join in, be a part of that. So it's important. You got to put key leaders in visible places. People need to see leaders leading the work. And I often say you don't ever ask people to do something that as a leader you're not willing to do yourself. So you got to put key leaders in visible places. Number four, you got to put people where they're vested. When you read Nehemiah chapter 3 and verses 23 to 30, you'll find out that Nehemiah put certain people at work, you know, near their home. And so they were vested. I'm going to really build this area right here because it's right near my home. So you got to put people to work where they're vested, where they are, have an interest in. So, and in that, you got to put people to work in areas that match their interests. He uses the analogy, which is one of the best, and that is the best youth workers are parents who have youth in their home. Those are the best youth workers. You want people in children's church. The best children's church workers are those who have a vested interest. They're going to put their best into doing what they need to do. So when you put people to work in vested places, you got to know they got to match their interests. That's A. And B, you got to put people to work in areas where they have passion. If they're not passionate about it, you know, they're not going to give 110%. You know, I agree with Dan Sutherland. I'd rather have a worker with second-rate ability that has passion than have a worker that has first-rate ability but no passion at all. Who do you think we're going to get the best out of? We're going to get the best out of the one that has the passion to do it, putting some oomph behind it. But C, you got to put them to work in areas where they are already at work. You know, you can't assume that a successful worker in one area can be moved to another area and still be successful. You don't try to force it. You don't put a square peg in a round hole. If you do that, you knock off the edges of the part of that person that has, you know, the God-given uniqueness, that special thing that they have. You're trying to put them somewhere else just because they're successful over here. Maybe they're successful in this area because that's their God-given uniqueness. And so, you know, put them to work in areas where they're already at work. They've already proven themselves that they can do this type of job, and you may expand it or give them more responsibility, but you know, you can't put a square peg in a round hole. You gotta put them to work where they're already at work. So to wrap it all up, here it is. How you implement vision has much to do whether or not the vision is going to come to pass. The how you do it, you know, you gotta, how you do it is really important. So again, we talked about, you know, implement one change at a time, implement your changes in strategic order, put key leaders to work in visible places. How you do it is going to mean the world to whether or not that vision is going to come to pass. Here's the key truth, number five, and that is to build on your strengths, not your weaknesses. A lot of churches try to, you know, program around their weaknesses, and you know, why not build on the strengths that you're already doing? You know, many churches, you know, program their weaknesses rather than capitalizing on their already God-given strengths. What are the strengths of the church? And just build on those. And, you know, often we make the mistake of adding ministries that we don't currently have, but you don't have the leadership and you don't have the capabilities. You don't have the wherewithal or the right people at the right time, at the right place, you know. I'd rather hold off on a ministry until God sends the right people at the right time. And build on the strengths that you already have. If it's worship, if it's evangelism or discipleship, whatever area that you build on those strengths. That's a key truth. Number five, build on your strengths and not on your weaknesses. Often we just try to copy other churches. You know, they got this ministry, it's going well, but that we may not be ready for that, or that's not our strength. That's we're weak in that area. Build on the strengths first, and then the weaknesses. When you copy the strategy of other churches, we often wind up with programs and events that do not really highlight the unique purpose and target of our church. You know, you're just copying. So it's, what makes our church uniquely our church? And we got to build on that. You know, most churches try to do too many things, and they end up a mile wide and an inch deep. They doing everything. And I'm not so certain that we ought to be doing everything. We ought to do what the Lord has called us to do, and we ought to focus on those strengths. Key truth number six, we must go slow. Hear me, when implementing any change related to vision. Many churches change too fast. You know, the speed of your transition really has to be determined by four factors. Number one, the distance you got to go. In other words, how much, you know, change needs to take place, and the distance of it. You know, it's important to understand that. Also, the size of the ship. That's important when you talk about implementing change, and you talk about how fast you got to go. You know, the size of the ship. When you're trying to turn around something, it's easier to turn around a smaller ship than it is to turn around a bigger ship. Also, the age of the ship. That's important too. You know, you got to get that. Because you can teach an old dog new tricks, but you must be patient with the dog. If you try to teach primarily a senior crowd to work in the new gen generation and all of that, it's, you know, the speed of the transition depends on the age of the ship. Not everybody can grab a hold of change that quickly. And then four, the speed of the transition is determined by the toughness of the leader, of the leaders. Can the leader handle the challenge? Because the truth is this, not all leaders can. You know, you gotta be tough, gotta be able to take it, gotta be able to hear, and we'll talk about it in later chapters when it gets to Nehemiah, but there's going to be opposition, there's going to be challenges. Do you have any stick-to-itness? Can you hang in there? You know, one of the challenges that they said about me, you know, here at Cornerstone was I could be tough. Well, and I agree with that. You know, there's certain way that I looked at things, and I wanted things done, and I learned to have a tough skin. I used to stay up all night worried about what people thought and how, you know, if I was going to please everybody. But you already know you can't please everybody, and trust me, I'm not going to try. I've learned to have some tough skin, and so that comes with a whole lot of other stuff, but you know, a whole lot of leaders can't handle that. They quit, they throw in the towel, they walk away. Not good, you know. And Sutherland said it best. He said, many churches are led by insecure leaders who are more concerned about what people think than what needs to be, you know. And that's an insecure leader. I'm so concerned about what you think about me. Well, I don't know. In my lifetime, I've been called every name under the sun. So it don't bother me. My only goal as a leader is to do what God wants me to do. Am I perfect? No. I just know that in my life, it's best to please God than it is to please man. So I hope you get that. So the toughness of the leader, that's how fast you can go, or the speed of, you know, not everybody can handle it. So here it is. I'm wrapping this up. Go slow, go slow, go slow, go slow, go slow, go slow. You got to go slow when making transitions. And I like the way Sutherland said it. He said that at his church, where the Lord allowed him to pastor, he said they took their sweet time, and they said, and he said, and they enjoyed the journey. Look, there is some joy that'll come when God gives you vision. Without vision, people perish. We know that. And God gives you vision, and then you start seeing the vision unfold and unpack, and you start implementing that vision. Go slow. Enjoy the ride, you know. Enjoy the journey. Let God give you the peace, the joy, the contentment. Go slow. It's okay, you know. Unless the Lord returns. I told you at the beginning of this study that vision is active. God is steadily moving, and we gotta take slow. We ain't in a hurry, unless God say be in a hurry. We gonna be patient and hear from God. And as you implement any kind of changes as a vision. So the question is this: How long will the vision take for your church? I don't know, but God knows. And all I know is that if you just trust God through it, Bible says it's clear. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding. And all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your path. We wrap this up. Love you. God bless you. We will see you on next Wednesday.